Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Okay, look. Yes, the headlines are scary, I get that. But can we take a minute here and just step back, please? Thank you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 20th of May. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. You know, I could do a whole setup song and dance here, tick through a couple of things that happened this week, and then get to the substance. Or we could just get to the substance, right? Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Jordan Holman's at Bloomberg. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
All right, so look, I want to do this. So there's going to be a little bit of a gut check here, Sudeep, and here's the deal, right? It seems to me that the general level of economic stress is up. Part of that is market volatility. You and I talked about that a couple of weeks ago on a Thursday. Part of it, obviously, is inflation. Here's my question, though. Isn't this what's supposed to happen as the Fed raises rates and we try to slow this economy?
This is exactly what's supposed to happen, okay. But 8% inflation was not supposed to happen.
Right.
And it was not supposed to happen month after month after month. And so nobody's really prepared for this. It's been 30 years since we've seen anything even close to this, 40 years, 50 years since we've had a similar environment. It's just not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. The Fed chair, Jay Powell, was on this program saying that within the last week. It's just not going to be pretty. And he knows that. We know that. We all just have to get to the point of accepting it. And that is the price that we will pay for getting to a better place. And just accept it, and then we'll get there. But we have to accept it. And the markets are basically indicating that they're going through that process right now.
Huh. A little bit of denial. All right. Jordan Holman, consumer and retail reporter for Bloomberg Extraordinaire. Here is my question to you. Retail sales, we learned this week, are up 0.9% March to April. That, I think, was the fourth consecutive month of increase. How long does that keep up as the aforementioned agita that we're having in this economy takes hold?
Yeah, it seems like we are coming to an end of that growth. And the important caveat of that growth that we saw in April is that it was not adjusted for inflation, yep. The numbers that we saw this week. So we do not know how much is taken into account of people are just spending more on the same items that they would have paid a lower price for this time last year. So that's super important. And then also the other thing is, how are people paying for that? Is that on credit cards? Because that has another implication for debt. So right now, to Sudeep's point, people are adjusting expectations for what this economy is going to look like and how consumers should be spending.
Yeah, I think people are adjusting. The stock market is adjusting, as Sudeep said, and businesses are adjusting. To which, Jordan, let me ask you one more thing. The story out of Target and Walmart this week about lower margins, inventory challenges. What are you hearing from the people who are in charge of these big retail companies about their prospects, I suppose?
Yeah, there's a lot of noise in the retail sector right now. So the main threat that I'm hearing is that consumer behavior has shifted so rapidly that there was an expectation that people were going to start spending more on services and goods, or also the type of goods that they were going to buy were going to change. So more in the grocery and food and gas, because people know that they're going to spend more money. So they might pull back on discretionary items like apparel. But when you're a large company like Target, you're ordering things out months in advance. So to switch that quickly is very difficult. And that's why you saw dramatic shifts in sell-offs for Target. Right. It was the most since 1987. Right. And that goes back to those expectations changing, just because these are big ships that have to change their strategies.
Yeah, the company was down, like shares were down like 25% in a day. All right, so Sudeep, let me ask you this, and I'm intentionally not prejudging the likelihood or not likelihood of recession, right? But it is much more in the air than it was even a couple of weeks ago. And so the question to you is not whether you think it's going to happen, but what are you going to be looking for? What are the indicators to you over the next, you know, 8, 12 months that this economy is slowing sharply?
So the obviously the most important indicator is the job market, is job growth, it's wage growth, how much that gets dented along mm-hmm. the way. That's really going to be the driver. The super hot job market is a leading driver of wage growth, which is good until we see 8% inflation, and that's what needs to get addressed. Look, there's a recession, and then there's a recession.
Right.
If we have some light rain, a very mild recession, that's kind of what that's Jay Powell's dream right now. That is, you have a little bit of a pullback in consumer spending. You let us get through this period. You have a small adjustment, and then we can come back out of it. But this lurching of the economy, 2 years ago, we were in negative oil prices, store mm-hmm. shutdowns. Nobody on an airplane. Now you can't get a seat on an airplane. It's all the opposite. How do you plan for that? If you're a business, how do you plan for that? If you're a consumer, how do you plan for that? If you've still got your stuff stuck on a boat somewhere, on a mm-hmm. ship trying to come over, how do you plan for that? We kind of just need to go through a brief cleansing period to get the system back in order. And hope we come out of it quickly, but it just needs to be brief because the downside is that it takes a long time, and that's just too painful for all of us.
Yeah, the cleanse is always so hard. So, Jordan, let me ask you this: what are you looking for to indicate that there's substantial economic slowing coming?
So looking at that consumer sentiment, because that is futuristic, mm-hmm. how people are feeling about that. Deloitte has had some data out today actually showing that the level of people being concerned about their savings has jumped up to 52% from 40% yeah. of Americans saying they're concerned. So looking at how people feel about the economy is really key, and also gives indications about, do they feel comfortable buying big ticket items? Do they feel comfortable buying discretionary items? And then that gives an indication of how retailers need to mm-hmm. plan for the future.
Jordan Holman, she's at Bloomberg, where she does consumers and retail. Sudeep Reddy's at Politico, where he's one of the people in charge. Thanks, you two. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, well, honestly, it was a mostly flat finish to a mostly ugly week, as we have been detailing all week. Details, numbers, when we get there. The general central bank vibe of late, if central banks can be said to have vibes, is that interest rates are going up to help get a handle on inflation, right? That's what Sudeep was talking about. The Fed, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank is expected to raise this summer. One bank going in the opposite direction, though, the People's Bank of China has decided to cut an important interest rate by a fraction of a percent to stimulate its economy. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on that one.
China's economy is in so much trouble right now that for the first time since 1976, the U.S. economy, according to Bloomberg Economics, is going to grow faster than China's.
You have the numbers just tumbling across China, from steel production to coal to consumer spending to property.
That's Ann Stevenson Yang at J Capital Research. China's numbers are tumbling in large part because of the country's zero COVID policy, which has caused many parts of the economy to grind to a halt.
I'm sure there's a joke by now in China that they've achieved, zero employment and zero production before they've achieved zero COVID.
China's central bank cut only one benchmark interest rate, the one that's used to price mortgages. Mark Williams at Capital Economics says China's been trying to prop up its housing sector,
particularly housing sales, which have been weak and falling for quite some time.
China would like to do more to juice its economy, but it has a problem: the Federal Reserve. Its rate hikes are luring investment to the U.S. David Dollar is with the China Center at the Brookings Institution. He says China's concerned that if it lowers its rates too much,
there would be massive capital outflows. That tends to increase inflation because it makes imported things more expensive.
In other words, the value of China's currency would tank. that would make Chinese goods cheaper and help the Chinese economy. But it's not the message the country wants to send right now, says Wing Tai Wu with the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network.
One of the biggest tension between US and China has been trade issues. And this could be misinterpreted as exchange rate manipulation.
Especially, Wu says, given how much the US has been buying from China. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Without discounting for a second the real stress and fear that parents of infants who need formula have been feeling lately, there is an economic object lesson in this whole debacle. Market concentration. Just four companies, as you've no doubt heard, make 90% of the formula sold in this country. So that recall and plant closure at just one of those companies that really tipped things over the edge, that's having some pretty serious ripple effects. Thing is, though, you can find similar concentration in lots of other places in the American economy. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one.
When we talk about market concentration, we're measuring the number of companies selling a product and each company's share of the total market.
So a market is considered highly concentrated if there are a small number of suppliers with relatively high shares.
Lee Moore Daphne is a professor at Harvard Business School. She says concentration gives companies more power to control prices. Plus,
if one of those firms is taken out of the business for any reason,
like a massive recall and a plant closure, no one's waiting to pick up the slack,
which could lead to price hikes and shortages.
During the pandemic, we've seen this play out with meat and computer chips. Brian Colacci is chief economist with the Open Market Institute. He says you'll find market concentration everywhere, from seeds for growing crops to cowboy boots to airlines.
Anyone, you know, who's over the age of 20 has seen the number of airlines decline and they've seen the prices rise and the experience of traveling deteriorate.
So how did we get here? Eleanor Fox studies competition policy at the NYU School of Law.
A merger policy that has been too lenient is one of the culprits.
For a few decades, Fox says the federal government has been pretty lax when two competing companies want to become one.
Saying, oh, mergers are fine and efficient, and if there are four firms left in a market or three firms left in a market, that's fine for competition.
Fox says the baby formula crisis should show us that that's not always the case. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
How many times do you suppose you've heard me say over the past couple of years some version of, boy, this is a really tight labor market, way more jobs available than there are people to fill them? So how come then in its earnings call this week, as I was talking to Jordan about, Walmart said one reason for its profit decline last quarter was because they were overstaffed. Amazon said something similar earlier this month. What now? Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looked into that one.
As a shopper, you may feel like the pandemic is over. Retailers, not so much, because COVID outbreaks can still take down their workforce. John Talbot directs the Center for Research and Education in Retail at Indiana University.
You know, in terms of staffing for that, it's challenging.
Companies need extra employees when people call out sick, and they're still trying to figure out, will people shop online or in stores, or keep using curbside pickup? Talbot says this affects how companies hire.
And so you end up having some excess capacity that I don't think they would have expected.
He says short term, overstaffing is better than missing sales. And it means some retailers are hiring more people part time, says Alan Benson, who studies staffing strategies at the University of Minnesota.
Companies are going to be experimenting with more models of achieving greater flexibility, and that could very well be a long-term trend to come.
A trend of hyper part-time or seasonal workers worries David Weil, a labor market expert at Brandeis University, because he says the whole takeaway from the Great Resignation is that workers are looking for consistency and opportunities to grow.
This is not the time to try to play games and have more volatile, temporary kind of jobs, but more to invest in a workforce that will stay with and benefit a company for a longer haul.
Right now, businesses are on a seesaw. teetering between the shifting labor demands of the pandemic and demands from workers for better jobs. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we're big believers that the best work is done in person.
Is it really, though? First, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials basically flat today, finished at 31,261. NASDAQ down 33 points, about 0.3%, 11,354. S&P 500 had a bad day, dipped into bear market territory, but finally adding a half a point to end flat. For the week, the Dow fell 2.9%, S&P 500 dropped 3%, NASDAQ down 3.8%. Bear market, by the way, we all know that, right? Down 20% from its most recent high. Anyway, heard from Samantha Marr about market concentration in, oh gosh, baby formula. Abbott Laboratories, which makes Similac, grew 0.7%. Perrigo, which makes some store brand formulas, gained 1.5%. Kristen Schwab talking about retailers, including Amazon, up 0.2%. Today, bonds rose again. Everybody wants them. Safe haven and all that. Yield on the 10-year T-note down again, because that's the way it works, down 2.79%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. There were five people in the office today here at Marketplace World Headquarters. Five. Our soft launch, voluntary back to the office, was end of March. But it's not just us who's not back, voluntary or not. We learned this week Apple has backtracked on its plan to have people come back to the office at least 3 days a week. And yes, there is a COVID wave up in the San Francisco Bay Area, but Apple and a whole bunch of other companies do find themselves negotiating the sometimes tricky balance of where we do the work that we do. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has that one.
So on one end of the water cooler, we've got employers.
We're big believers that the best work is done in person.
John Replogle runs One Better Ventures. It's a venture capital firm focusing on health and wellness. His team is mostly back in the office.
Nonverbal communication and culture, teamwork, trust are built face-to-face.
Three-quarters of HR leaders say they're having engagement issues with remote work, according to Challenger Gray and Christmas. Now, on the other side, there are employees.
The typical person does want to come in. They just don't want to come in 5 days a week. On average, in our survey data, they want to come in 2 days a week.
Nick Bloom is a professor at Stanford who studies remote work. He says, for now, employers and employees are at an equilibrium.
You know, there is any plan that was the standard plan. It will be work from home Monday, Friday, often Wednesday, come in Tuesday, Thursday.
Last year, employers didn't want to expose workers to COVID. And then, increasingly, the issue became not wanting to expose workers to annoyance, especially workers who could easily get a job elsewhere in a tight job market. Andy Challenger is a senior VP at Challenger Gray and Christmas.
We're still really in this cycle of every 3 months, companies come out with their line in the sand, the date when everybody's going to return to the office. And then as we approach that date, they have to back off of it.
But what the job market giveth, the job market can taketh away. And as the economy slows down, he says employers may get a little more leverage to drag us back in. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
So we're clearly not going back to the office on the regular anytime soon, but various other parts of our lives are more face-to-face now than they've been in a couple of years. Medical appointments, for one. Doctors sometimes. Also, though, dentists, because how's that Zoom teeth cleaning going to go, do you suppose? And after that office visit, look out for the follow-up. Yes, treatment if needed, but we're talking here about ratings and reviews. Medical offices are among the businesses, because healthcare is a business, right? We've talked about that. Medical offices are asking us to rate our experiences. The medical field is highly competitive, as you know, and patients are searching the web for recommendations like never before. Ashley Milne-Tite has our story on that.
Dr. Mina Kim owns a dental practice in Midtown Manhattan. She took over the practice from her dad, who still works here, but she's more comfortable with the digital technology around the office. You know that goopy stuff dentists traditionally slathered on to take a mold of your teeth? Kim uses a digital scanner to do the same thing.
A special adapter goes on here, and you just press it, and you scan the tooth.
Send off the digital image, and the patient's crown is constructed from that. Another new approach concerns online reviews. In the last couple of years, Dr. Kim's office staff have begun asking patients right after their appointment if they'd leave a review.
And the main reason we did that was I look at certain analytics. And I saw that the most traffic, other than word of mouth, was really coming through either Google or Yelp.
And to rank highly on those sites, you need a bunch of good reviews. She says it's particularly important for her, given how many rivals she has. Manhattan alone has at least 2,000 practicing dentists.
I can probably throw a rock on the street and hit a dentist if I wanted to. This is the thing with reviews. You can be the best dentist in the world with the most beautiful office. If no one knows about it, you're not going to have any patients.
She has about 40 Google reviews so far, mostly glowing, but she says fewer than 5% of patients bother to leave one. That figure is typical for healthcare practices because of people like Daniel Fletcher, who lives in Seattle.
I always think these are not benevolent organizations. These are for-profit companies. So I get frustrated that they think they can intrude on my time.
He says he never leaves reviews, even if he's asked repeatedly. Sarah Eggers in Kansas City says she's happy to help a doctor she has a good relationship with. She's done that.
And I don't get that reminder every time because once they saw my review, I didn't get reminders again.
But she says other providers pursue her with texts and emails that start right after an appointment ends. Take her local urgent care clinic, where she took her 5-year-old daughter on a recent Saturday. After the diagnosis...
Before I'm even in my car, after I just buckled her in, I get a text being like, hey, do you want to leave us a review? I'm like, no, I'm not in the mood to leave a review. My daughter's sick and I need to go get her medicine. She has another ear infection.
She says the tone-deaf timing is a turnoff. Shama Haider is CEO of marketing company Zen Media. She advises healthcare practices to follow up with patients 1 to 2 days, not minutes, after an appointment.
You don't want to go so long where a patient has completely moved on with their life and has forgotten about that experience, or worse yet, had a rough experience and has already decided to share that on a public forum.
Which can then scare off potential patients. She says many medical offices have a system in place to try and deal with a patient's concerns right away.
For example, you get an email that says, rate your experience 1 to 5. And if it's anything 3 or below, they can follow up and they can address it.
And mollify the patient before they blast the practice on Google or Yelp. Haider says for all the power of reviews, word of mouth is still connecting patients with doctors. It's just that that's gone digital as well. Recommendations happen on social media and in private chat groups. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite. for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, one of the less thought about effects of the inflation we are dealing with. Saw this on CNBC, a study from New York Life that shows about one out of three adults are putting less aside for emergencies now so that they can cover daily expenses. Average amount that's not going to everybody's rainy day funds monthly, $243. That is not nothing. And we did a study, a poll actually, with our friends at Edison Research about 2 years ago, that showed 47% of people wouldn't be able to come up with $250 to cover unexpected expenses. So that $243 that's not going, it's a lot. All right, we're going. Here is your moment of economic context, a quick dip into oil. The U.S. benchmark today, West Texas Intermediate, of course, $112.70 a barrel. Now, why, I hear you asking me, why, Kai, if oil is off its peak, as it is, why have pump prices not gone down? And in fact, in many cases, gone up. One word, refining capacity. Okay, yes, that's two words, but we'll have that refining story for you next week. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassid is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.